Welcome to NSQ, No Stupid Questions, a podcast that asks everything you want to know but wouldn't ask. I'm Priscilla Britton, graduate of Brixham Finishing School, the creators of the Ad Academy, a new online course from industry experts for untapped talent. In this series, I'm talking to industry leaders about what they have learned on the way to where they are today. With me in the studio is Maria McDowell, Director of Project Management, known for her effortless ability to simplify a complex brief and keep projects moving at pace, whilst doing so with unwavering grace. For years, Maria has mentored young people from underrepresented backgrounds and challenged the industry on how organisations onboard and support diverse talent as a D&I consultant. Maria, hello.
Wonderful. Okay, so let's just kind of have a chat about navigating this industry. Mm-hmm. So if we're taking project management, for instance, like what actually is that?
Project management, right. So in the context of digital advertising, it is working on the brief, getting the budget, working out who are the right players to be in this project, and pulling them together, getting their timings, understanding people, pulling together a timing plan, and organising the project so that you get it done on time and on budget. So it sounds pretty straightforward, but it is not, because everybody has their individual, you know, motivations and ways of working. So really, I always kind of say that project management sometimes is kind of like 40 in terms of knowing how to actually do project management and managing a project, and 60% is people and understanding their motivations and trying to get the best out of them. So one person might say it will take them a day to do something, but you know it's going to take them 3 days, so you add in 3 days in the plan. It's about understanding all these various different elements, pulling them together to ensure you get the project delivered on time. And you know, it's quite a difficult job, because when everything goes wrong, it's all your fault, and when everything goes right, nobody knows who you are. So because you are the mysterious force in the background that just makes things run smoothly.
That feels like a pressured job.
I find it very pressured, because you're judged on the performance of your team. You know, you've got to be organized, you've got to make lists, you've got to deal with curveballs, you've got to think two steps ahead. And it's all about kind of like communicating. That's what I've learned, because I've been, you know, the wake up at night going, oh, I've forgotten this, I've forgotten that, oh my god, it's going to fail and it's all going to be my fault and I'm going to lose my job and then everyone's going to hate me and everyone's going to think I'm terrible. And then you go, actually, take a step. And also, I think it's all about kind of taking control. So you know, it's learning, and age has told me that you cannot fix everything, you can communicate everything.
Interesting.
And that is the stance that I've taken, and I've had to take, because I've had quite difficult nights and difficult periods with anxiety, and it can be challenging, but it is a very good career, and it can pay quite well. But it's just about managing that and knowing yourself and being able to communicate. I'd say communication in project management.
It feels like people are the extraneous variable in that. Like, people can make or break a project.
100%.
Has there ever been a time where it's been very difficult to manage certain people?
Has there ever been a time? I mean, like, that is standard. It's a bit more about the degree, you know. I mean, I've had to people in meeting rooms and say, you will not speak to me like that, and you will not speak to people in my team like that. They'll get defensive and go, oh, I wasn't doing that. And then I think when they think about it, they go, actually, yes. Or they won't apologise, because this is a modern day phenomenon where people don't apologise. They just get a bit quiet and then, you know, a little bit sheepish, and then further on down the line, they're a bit nice to you. Just let's sweep that under the carpet. And it's just, and you know, you need to get a job done, so you just continue with it.
Right? And if it makes a change in their behaviour, that is the main thing, even if you don't get the sorry that you were hoping for.
That's it.
And you said something really interesting about being the person who takes somebody aside. Yes. And I think for young people entering the industry, you're kind of hoping that you're
going to be working under somebody who's happy to have that conversation.
Yes.
So, like, would you subscribe to the view that you should choose a manager as opposed to a role?
I think it is very much about... the ideal scenario is to be in the role that you really love, mm-hmm. and obviously you get a great manager. I would say if there was two roles that you really loved, and maybe you loved one role a bit more than the other, but the manager that you had on the role that you didn't like so much was amazing, I'd probably pick the one with the manager, mm-hmm. because your whole experience of a company is your manager sometimes, right? Mm-hmm. Because if they are supportive of you, if you can speak freely, if you can, you know, tell them how you feel and are not made to feel like you're a bit of an idiot or you're stupid, then you'll fly, you know, and you can maybe tell them that actually, I like this element of the job, but I'd really like to do that bit over there, and they're supportive of you, then you'll fly. If you're in a job which is the perfect job, but your manager is dismissive of you, you may find that you start to lose confidence and that you fall out of love with that role, when really it's not the role, it's the experience that you're given, because you're not learning, because you're worried about failing. And that is a huge issue that I had in at the beginning, is that I was worried about failing. If you don't have a great manager, then maybe finding other people in the organisation that are, you know, want to champion you, or want to kind of be there for a mentor or something like that. I think it's important, because I think it's important to have somebody to talk to and who you can be honest with, and have that open form of communication. Otherwise, you'll just take it on and you'll just get stressed, and then you'll go home, and then you'll talk to, if you've got a partner or you've got family, you just bore them, because really they don't understand it, right? So that's what I was doing, speaking to my mum going, oh dear, maybe you can speak to them about that. So it's difficult. So I would just say, yeah, I think it's about people, and it's about finding somebody who will advocate for you. And as somebody who has drowned, I've drowned a few times. Mm. Tell you what, it does make you learn. and it's made me the person that I am. Mm-hmm. But if I can help somebody to not have to go through that and navigate around it, then that's what I'll do. And that's part of why I wanted to do mentoring, and why I've chosen the kind of direction that I've been walking in, because I want to be that which I didn't necessarily have at the beginning of my career. Yeah. And that would have saved me a lot of heartache and a lot of sleepless nights. Yeah.
I think that's a huge thing. And like, being able to learn from somebody's lived experience is so powerful. And yeah. I think it can really change the direction somebody else then coming up is walking into, because mm-hmm. there are some things that they could just completely avoid.
Yes.
And what you were saying about that distinction between the environment that you're working in and how that reflects back on you. Like, yeah. does it make you lose confidence because you're not speaking up and you're not asking the questions that you need answered?
Yes.
Is that really a question on your ability, or is it more a reflection of the culture?
There we go. Well, this is a thing. And then what you do is you then start to perceive that everybody is performing so much better than you are. Yeah. And it's not. You have a skewed view of what the reality is, you know, and then you start to, you know, and it's that negative self-talk. Oh my God, I'm terrible. I don't know what I'm doing. And really, a lot of people feel exactly the same as you do, but you don't feel that you can talk, because you feel like it's just going to expose you. And so you have imposter syndrome. You have the fact that you're tired. You have the fact that you just, you know, you just feel alone, and you just take that on board. And it's not, you know, it's unnecessary.
It's unnecessary. But do you know what?
Mm-hmm.
There are ways that we can all cope.
Yes.
So what are some of your strategies for like looking after yourself and making sure that you are in a position to give your best at work?
I try and take regular breaks.
Mm-hmm.
I think there is a lot of project managers, or maybe I'll just speak to myself, I like to multitask, all right? Because it's like five things at one time. My mind works quite quickly. I've got to do this. And I think sometimes you just have to stop and go, right, here's one little bit that I'm going to do. Stop, have a little bit of a break, and then I'm going to focus on a different task. So it's just having like regular breaks to stop, let your mind rest a little bit, and go on to something else. I think also wine helps.
the medicinal properties of wine.
But really, it's just about, I think also having the time away sometimes. So I would always say take not only just a break between tasks, but like an hour, like have your lunch. Okay. I think it's really important to take it. You think that you are being productive, but you're actually not, because it's just taking an hour to go, oh my gosh, oh, I was going to send this email because I was like manic and wanted to get it done, but actually that's not the right approach to do, to send that email. What I should do is think about having that conversation. And when I have that conversation with that person, I can bring somebody else into that conversation. And then I actually, and it just, it's about kind of taking the break to be more strategic, to just think more bigger picture. Because I think when you're just, you know, throwing things out, you don't have the perspective. So it's really about taking mini breaks, taking proper breaks, and also being aware of the self-talk that you have to yourself. You know, I don't understand this, I don't this, well, you know, do I know what I'm doing? You know, that's very real. You know, I always say, speak to yourself the way that you would speak to your friend. And just be aware of those voices. And also making sure that you have somebody that you can speak to and sense check stuff with, right? So it might be somebody in the job that I'm in, or it might be somebody who is sort of at my level or who understands the industry, who I can just go, look, this happened. Did I react in the right way? Or I'm thinking that it was perceived this way. What do you think? You know, and somebody who will be objective with me to kind of, because sometimes, you know, I've messed something up, or I've handled it the wrong way, and I need to know that, right? Mm. So it's just about having somebody to sense check you and to give you a reality check. And help you kind of, if you're going off kilter, that actually, Maria, are you okay? Because I feel like you're, you know, and having those breaks and being able to kind of be kind to yourself would be those self-help kind of things.
I think that's amazing. And something that you said in there around having somebody to essentially tell you what it is, like reflect back to you the situation so that you're aware that maybe you're not doing your best, you know?
Yes.
Because then you have the opportunity to manage it before it takes over, I suppose.
Yes, absolutely. And also being open to that, right? Because, you know, I think it's about, because sometimes when I would get criticism, I would be, you know, quite defensive. Your first reaction is, well, no, I did that because it's like, actually, you're right, you know? And now it's kind of a maturity to go, look at the person who's giving you that feedback and look at the heart behind it, look at the intention behind it, because sometimes people give you feedback because they don't have a great heart and they don't have great intention, and the feedback might even not be right, but that's fine if the intention behind it is that it's for your benefit. And you know, I've been in situations where somebody's given me feedback and I've been a bit defensive about it, and then I've thought about it and gone, actually, right, you know, I need to change it this way. So I always listen and then take what I need and leave what I don't, right? Because it's also about being self-aware and knowing yourself and going, that's their feedback and that's great, but I did this because of this reason and I understand it and I think it was the right course of action. And that's kind of boss level, like getting to an age where you kind of know yourself. It's good, it's quite empowering, I feel. You know?
100%.
Yeah.
Do you think you developed self-awareness? Was that something that you always had, like coming into the industry, or have your experiences shaped or crafted?
I definitely didn't have self-awareness when I came into the industry. Definitely not. No. I think it's, as you say, I think it's your experiences that shape you. I think it's having very low lows that shape you and go, right, okay, I'm not going to go back there again. And recognizing the milestones that, you know, are happening to go, oh, I can see where this is going to take me. I'm not going to do that again. And then going, actually, I'm going to surround myself with different people and start doing different habits. And that then gives you a sense of self for working in certain environments and you can that didn't serve you, and going, I'm recognizing these elements from that time when I worked at a place here and I don't like it, so I'm going to remove myself out of it, and realizing that you will always be okay. That baseline confidence that you will always be okay and you don't need to stress, is that kind of awareness that, you know, if you don't like something, walk away. But after you sense checked, after you understand, after you kind of have a view of where you want to go, I just think that's quite, I think it all blends to understanding you and getting to where you want to go. You know, it's gosh, having self-awareness at the beginning, no way. God, struggling. I was doing some hustling and you know, changing my CV to kind of find the position that I wanted to go into, and yeah, it was tricky. So just on that, when I started my career, I was like, wow, I did this role, and I was like, wow, I'm doing this role and it's great, but I'm seeing other people do different roles which look really exciting, and they seem to be getting paid more money but be doing slightly more exciting stuff. How do I get to be where they are? And then it was like having those conversations with them, you know, trying to do aspects of my role that was similar, in brackets, to them, and then changing my CV and then getting a role like that. But obviously I didn't know what I was doing. So it's a two-edged sword, right? Because you get in that role and then you don't know what you're doing. So then you lose more confidence. And then it's like, but then you try and then, you know, steady the water, and then you go, okay, where do I go from here? Do I like this role? Or if, you know, if I stuck at it, I would get better, or would I, or do I want to do something else? I kind of want to do this other role over here. And then, you know, so yeah, eventually I found my feet, but that's kind of how I started it. I was a little bit wily.
It's so interesting because a lot of the people who were part of the BFS program this year really found it difficult because their minds were so curious. Like, there are so many things to get involved with within the creative industries, and you're young. Like, it feels really difficult to decide on one path now.
Yes.
So do you think that movement and looking and seeing what other people are doing is part of the journey?
100%.
So, like, now's the time.
Yes, 100%. Oh, my God. How would you know what you want to do?
Yeah.
It's impossible. I mean, I think it's impossible. I mean, I've changed. I went from customer services to account management, to project management. And, you know, you just, you have to go in and feel what feels right. Mm. That's why I think kind of going into a role, seeing and making those relationships with people in different departments and getting that insight is super, super important. And people, you know, people change their careers all the time, you know, but it's about maybe having a bit of a plan and going, maybe if I can, you know, speak to this person or chat to them or look at the documentation that they write or talk to them about the kind of meetings they have and what they need to produce, or wow, look at the content that's being created, you know, how did you do that? And it's fine, but when you're in a role and you're getting paid, that is like the kind of premium place to be, and then you can be really honest with your boss potentially and go, oh, I like this bit and this bit, but I'm doing my job really well.
Yeah.
You know, focus on your job, but then be looking around, and that's great, because I think companies will appreciate that because you're showing enthusiasm. And if you get, you're able to kind of sometimes stick your toe in those different bits, then you're more likely to feel kind of fulfilled and you're more likely to stay in that company. So I think it's only a good thing.
Yeah. And then I suppose in a weird way, you're able to then build the necessary experience on your CV. 100%. That if you then want to move and try something different, there's a good foundation there.
100%. And you're more confident, right? Because even if you, for example, you go into a company and you're in one particular role, you then get a taster of three or four different roles, the understanding of the other roles can help you understand your role even better and how it all fits together. And then that then helps your confidence, right? To then, you know, you then feel like, well, no, I understand how that pulls into this, so I can do another job, right? And that insight that you have that you can bring to wherever you go, you know, it's fantastic. You know, it's just a building block to you and what you can offer.
That's amazing. I think that's going to help so many people. I just wanted to circle back slightly.
Sure.
Because there were some mentions around knowing what you didn't like from other places you had worked in.
Yes.
I was just hoping you could expand on that.
So, I have, my view is that sometimes the fish rots from the head down, right? And I think that when you get a job, you know, and sometimes you then meet some very senior people, for me, it's just a vibe that you can get from them. Are they open? Who are the people on the leadership team? Do they all just look a certain way? Do they all have the same certain personality traits? And are they open? Are they truly open? And are they nice? Mm. Are they nice people? Mm. If they're not, and they're a little bit toxic, you'll find that most people around them are toxic, either because they feel like, oh, I've got to do whatever they say, and I've got to keep my job, and I'm worried about my job. And then what that happens is it fosters an environment where people want to throw everybody else under the bus, and people are worried about their jobs, and that's just no way to be. So, yes, environments like that, no. environments where you can't be yourself, right? And I think as a black woman anyway, it's difficult to be yourself. But even more so where you feel like you have to put on a completely, completely different face and ignore certain toxic people, okay? Because it could be, so obviously you've got the organisations where the leadership is completely toxic. Mm. And then you have companies where people are generally nice, but you have two or three people who are terrible people, right? Terrible, and nobody wants to have the conversations with those people to stop their behaviour, and they're left to be tyrants, right? And that again is another thing, because it's like, well, you need to have the backbone to have those conversations, because they are making other people's lives misery.
Yeah.
And you know, come on, have the conversation, be grown up, you know. It's environments like that, and also being in an environment where you have a manager who's a bully. You know, I've been bullied, and I think something that's really important is the knock-on effect to being bullied. I think it is something that is not often talked about. It might be that you're in a job and you get bullied, and so you lose your confidence. People around you start to look at you differently. You then worry, do I love my job, or maybe I need to get out the whole industry altogether? And really, it's just some horrible person. And then you leave and you recover and you go to a few other jobs. And then, you know, if you then come up with another problem in a subsequent job down the line, sometimes those fears and those feelings from the time when you were bullied can rear its head again. So it's very, you know, any kind of sign of bullying, I would say nip that in the bud. Go and speak to a mentor or somebody else to not let that impact you, because I think in life, sometimes things, trauma happens and you think you're fine and you're not fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like one incident really manifests into something greater.
Massively.
What are the signs of bullying?
For me, it's just feeling undermined all the time, especially if you're quite junior. I think that companies don't necessarily look after junior staff, you know, because what will happen is, for example, you'll be in a company and you'll have a boss, and the boss might take a dislike to you, and you're working hard because you want to please your boss and you're trying your best, and the boss is being vague with what they require from you. So you try and ask them, and then they're even worse to you. So then you start going, oh my God, is it me? You know, and you feel really victimized. You feel that you have no power. You feel like there's no one you can speak to because it's your boss, right? And sometimes companies will go, well, if they leave, it's easier to replace the more junior person than the person who's the boss. Also, the person who's the boss, I'm going to have a difficult conversation with. I can't really be bothered to have that conversation with them. And you then go, oh, it must be me then, right? Mm-hmm. And they're assigned. I think pay attention to your instincts. I think instinct is a very, very key way to find out, you know, see how you're feeling. Does this person make you shrink when you're in their company? Do they make you doubt yourself? Do you feel depressed when you're in their presence or when you have to go to work? Is it them? you know, those things. You live once, just recognise that. And, you know, speak to somebody who's in the company who you can trust. Find a mentor would be the first thing I'd say. Yeah. Not everybody that you can trust either. That's a whole other podcast. But I just think find somebody a sponsor and just sense check those things. Because it might be that you're just not performing, right? And that's okay too. But what your boss needs to be is clear. And you need to feel comfortable in coming to them and going, look, I don't know how to do this. Can you help me?
Yeah.
You know, that's what it needs to be, rather than I'm scared to ask you because you're going to shout at me or you're going to make me feel really bad and I don't know. You know, it needs to be an open channel. Otherwise, how are you going to get better?
Yeah.
But if they've already decided that they don't like you and they don't want you in their business, then that's how they're going to be. And that is bullying.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that is super clear. And it's like it goes back to what you said before, that there's always a way.
Yes.
There is always a way. So even if you find yourself in that situation.
Yeah.
There are ways to navigate it.
Yes.
With the help of other people.
Absolutely. And also, there isn't a one-size-fits-all solution, okay? Because I could say, go to HR, and sometimes HR are part of the problem. I'm sorry, but I'm just going to call this thing a thing, right? Where they have the best interests of the business rather than you. Maybe that's me being a bit jaded, but sometimes they're amazing, sometimes they're not. It all depends on the situation, right? And sometimes it's about, well, actually, if I do confront my boss, I'm going to end up without a job. Maybe it's about, okay, can I try and transition into a different department? Sometimes it's like, okay, maybe I need to look at me, how you are you being super defensive when they speak to you, right? Because not everybody is a good boss. Not everyone gets trained to be a leader or to be a manager, right? And maybe it's just their personality and your personality. It's just about trying to work that way through. Or sometimes it's about you need to just leave. You know, and having a plan B, and sometimes, you know, having a plan B might make you feel at ease anyway. That if it all kicks off, I can go here.
Yeah, but there's comfort that comes with that 100%, and I think that's one of the reasons why places like Brixham Finishing School exist, with strong mentorship programs of which you head up.
Yes.
To make sure that every person that BFS brings into the industry has somebody on their side from day dot, so that if anything happens, they have somebody they know they can trust and speak to to help them navigate the situation so they're not alone and that they can always feel like there is a way through.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, even all that to say as well, that, you know, you get given a mentor. You know, it's all about human relationships. And even after the program is finished, 9 times out of 10, if you want to contact that mentor again and go, this is what's happening, can you help? People want to help, you know, or even coming, you know, I've got people from past cohorts that, you know, I'm still in contact with trying to help them, right? Because life doesn't just end, you know, we're all human and situations happen. So it's super important to have a mentor. And I didn't have a mentor at the beginning of my career. I didn't have it. And as I said, and, you know, I'm asking family members, and why you don't speak to him? But I've already, you know, it doesn't always work. Yeah. So just, and also sometimes it's about knowing someone's in your corner, you know, and it's about knowing that somebody can help you, or somebody might be able to get you another gig if this one doesn't work out, or, you know, just running scenarios. You know, sometimes it might be that it's not even the person. You might, sometimes when you're in a role, you might go, oh my god, this person is my nemesis and they hate me, and really that's all in your head. This is just a fabrication that's playing out in your mind. And having a mentor to go, why don't you run this scenario with me, and then they go, no, it doesn't make sense. And you just, somebody, sometimes they could just say one thing that just frees you, you know. And that happened to me as well. I was like, oh, they're probably not thinking that way at all. Wow, you've just imagined this whole saga in your head, you know. It's fantastic. And I think generally people are nice people and people want to help.
Yeah, that is that's all that I've seen so far from doing the program. So we've spoken a little bit about project management and what that role means. You mentioned digital project management.
Yes.
So how does the agency you work at shape the kind of projects you'll be delivering?
So so I started off in a kind of more pure play digital agency. Okay. So it was very much that we would get there'd be the advertising agencies that would come up with a concept, come up with a TV ad, and it'd be like, right, here are these assets, you know, create a website or use it to create some ads or use it to create, you know, an app. And then we'd be reliant on those assets. So I would then be managing teams of designers to take those assets, you know, make a website, etc. I think more so now, it's more kind of working in advertising agencies where it's more integrated projects where they're coming up with the concept for the TV. You know, we also want to do some digital. So it's a bit further up the chain. So that's what I do at the moment. And it all depends on the clients that you have, the type of work. You know, are they quite ambitious and a little bit more adventurous? Mm-hmm. Then you kind of get exciting projects. What you'll find is that it's a mix of both. Mm-hmm. You know, the exciting projects, which sort of intersperse with the business as usual projects. Do this email, do this small site, do this small piece of comms. So it's kind of a mixture of both. Mm-hmm. And you'll find that you kind of take the rough with the smooth. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
So for exciting projects, what kind of work is that?
So exciting projects would be, I like doing the TV ads mm-hmm. side of it, the integrated stuff, seeing the idea that the concept has come up with and, you know, looking at how that can work in the various different mm-hmm. kind of touch points, TV ads, etc., and going, oh wow, okay, we want to emphasize awareness or emphasize these brand pillars, and this is how this idea here kind of works in these different channels is super interesting. I won't say brands because I work with so many.
Okay.
You know, looking at the casting and who they're going to do it, and then seeing the finished ad. Mm. I think the whole life cycle of a project and it's just, I love it.
Yeah.
And I think when you kind of also do experiential and you actually take it and it's there in front of you as a piece of hardware where people are interacting with it is fantastic. And I love stuff like that.
Yeah, that sounds super cool.
Yeah.
When we were speaking earlier, that project management is integral to getting stuff live.
Yeah.
So that shift from it being conceptual to it becoming something tangible that mm-hmm. people can see and experience is down to the team of project managers.
Yes.
So how do you go from being good at that to great at that?
Oh, I guess it's just... I think it's people. Mm. I think it's you being confident and you communicating, right? Mm. So it's just going, okay, and anticipating what you think other people are going to want from you, right? Mm. So it's about, right, you'll do the first project, you'll be a little bit juddery because you don't really know what's expected of you. You don't really know what your role, what's the account manager's role is, what the TV producer's role is, and this, that, the other. And you'll do it, and you'll do a few projects, and it'll be a bit like, do you do that? Do I do that? Oh, you need this from me? I don't have it. Oh, gosh. And then you'll start to realise, oh, I'm responsible for this. You do that, blah, blah, blah. It's like, cool, is this quite right? Yeah, you're on the right track. Cool, again, a few more projects. Then it's like, right, I'm doing this, you're doing that, you'll do the other, and you're taking more control as you get more and more confident.
Okay.
And you're anticipating projects, problems and opportunities. And have you thought about this? And you just get more confident, more. You do something 100 times, you just get better and better and better. And different companies and agencies do things slightly different.
Mm.
And it's about understanding that. And the more you do, the better you get, the more confident you get, the more unfazed by problems you get. Because, you know, and the more... you know, people start to trust you and you're honest, all right? And I think it's there's a line between kind of communication and being, how do we say, oh my God, what about this? Oh my God, this is not going to happen. You know, it's about communicating in a way that people know what's happening, but you're trying to kind of control it and mitigate for that. So, for example, the talent hasn't turned up. Okay, well, maybe I'm letting you know that if they don't turn up by this time, we can't do, we won't potentially be able to do the shoot, but maybe we can do something else, or we need to let the client know. And so it's about having a plan and trying to fix stuff and be positive, whilst also not burying yourself. So you're communicating and trying to be on top.
So how much of that is acting and then genuinely feeling calm, collected and just managing it?
It really depends. You know, because I think as a project manager, I think for me anyway, I'll speak for myself, when I first started, it was very much like, oh my God, I can't control this. I don't know what's going to happen with this. I don't know. And then you realise that you cannot control everything. What you can do is let people know. Mm-hmm. So it's still, the thing is still broken. The thing is still not going to go live. So let's take, for example, you've got a website and there's 100 bugs on it and you're supposed to go live tomorrow. There's 100 bugs in it. Okay, let's try. I don't think it's going to go live tomorrow. What we can do is get 15 testers and developers on board. Mm. Can we get them on board? But it's likely still not going to go live. You've rang the bell. You've let everybody know. Right, somebody needs to have a conversation with the client. Right, and you know, so it's still not going to go live and it's still going to be buggy, but you've expressed it. You've shared that. People know, ideally in good time. Mm. Right, and so it's not just you who's got this knowledge, who's mm-hmm. dying and nobody knows and you're scared. You've communicated. It's like putting on your big girl pants yeah. and having that conversation, or you know, more likely also is actually stepping back and having the foresight and going, oh my gosh, this needs to go live in 2 weeks time. There is no way this is going to happen unless we do this and we do that. Mm-hmm. So if we do this and that fails, I suggest you then go and speak to the client, or we get the client on board and then we work. It's about mitigating risk.
Yeah, yeah. Just
so yes, you are panicked, but when you share it, you feel better.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you are a team.
Yeah.
Right?
And then you've got more people working to solve the problem.
Yes. Yes. So yes, you still panicked, but it's not just you, right?
Yeah.
Because then, you know.
And I think so one of my questions was, what are the pain points of a role in production? But I wonder if we've ticked off quite
yes,
a few.
Yes, probably.
Things.
It's just kind of understanding what your realm is and what your remit is and what you can control, and being able to say no or say, I'm not sure. Let me go and check, right? And people throwing curveballs at you. If you are not able to be forthright and having confidence to go, actually, I don't think we can do this, rather than going, yeah, you're going to come a cropper. So you need to be able to have straightforward conversations or be able to speak to your manager or the people who can have those conversations.
Yeah.
I've been in situations where I didn't feel that I could, and I've said yes, and then I've, you know, buried myself. But you learn and you go, this is not going to happen to me again. Or when you say no, you say, I don't think we should do this for these reasons. Mm. We could do something similar to that, maybe at a later date or phase that in, but I am concerned because of these reasons. If you document that, you make it very clear, and they still decide to go ahead, then you've covered yourself.
Yeah.
All right, so it's the way that you say no, right? Because it shouldn't be, you know, at the end of the day, people are trying to create something that's amazing from a creative perspective, and your job is to facilitate that, not just be no, you know, because you want to see that too, but you also need to be realistic and help to support that by telling them the parameters under which it is possible.
So project management facilitate the execution of a creative idea.
Yes.
And sometimes that means flagging where there could be potential difficulties.
Yes, that is your job.
Yes. Yeah. But for the most part, you're there to see something.
See something amazing get made. And it's nice when you're in the flow state and you're doing this project and you're like, right, we're going to do this and this is amazing. And you're into it and you love the creative and it's getting done. And it's because of the organisation that you've done. And you're, you know, often if you're working with a TV producer as well, it's just great. You don't necessarily get the recognition as the creatives and the account people, but you know that you did a great job and it went off without a hitch, or it went off with loads of hitches, but nobody would have known about it because you saved the day, you know?
Oh, I like that. Yeah. Save the day.
Yeah.
Project management.
We're
team
heroes.
Of heroes.
100%, honestly. Team PM, man. Producers, whatever you want to call them.
I love that. What about your biggest fuck up?
Biggest fuck up. Right, gosh. I would say, and it was more from a mental health perspective, is that I wanted desperately to be promoted. Mm. So I was working on an account that I loved. Those who know me knows what I'm going to say. I was working on an account that I loved, and they took me off that account and they put me on a recent pitch that they'd won, mm-hmm. which was massively undersold. Very, very difficult clients. I was carrying that project and working stupid hours, 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, and going home and then having clients message me at 6 in the morning, you know, going being back to work, trying to get this live because I wanted to prove that I was worthy to be promoted, even though I was doing elements of that role. In fact, I say I was doing the role that I wanted to be promoted into already. And I think that they'd felt that because I don't know, for whatever reason, but I would just say that I felt that I was not treated very well. I worked super hard. I ended up having anxiety, and I think I was having panic attacks. I wanted it to go live so much, and I wanted it to work, and nobody was supported. And I think I should have just gone, stop, no, right? Because that really affected my health. And in the end, they didn't want to promote me anyway. So because I just felt that, you know, I won't. It's a podcast. It's a thing that's going to be out. So I won't go into too much detail. But what I would say in terms of fuck up would be that I should have said no earlier. This is going down, and there's no way we're going to do it. I need help. Flag. Now I did flag, but I didn't go no. We can't do this because I wanted to be super PM. Pull it out of the ground and get it done. And we did do it. It was buggy as hell. And I think it was a massive accomplishment. But I feel like I was sort of set up to fail, and I should have flagged that earlier, I'd say.
That's so interesting, because I think when you've got ambition, it can really motivate you.
Yes.
But then it can also equally become like the thing that you're working towards can become the thing you resent,
yes.
if it doesn't feel like it pays off.
Yes.
Or
but I think people use that, right? Because I think it was known that that's what I wanted, and people use that to give you to control you, right? Because nobody else would have wanted that project. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They just, oh, she'll do it because she wants to be promoted, mm-hmm. and that's an ethical thing that people need to look at also, because I think people, you get to a certain age, your life kind of style changes, you might get married, you might want a child, you think, oh my God, how am I gonna, you know, and people see that and they go, oh, you're hungry for it, we'll give you that. And I think that's, you know, I think it's about having the wherewithal to go, actually, I'm not gonna let that control me. As you said, you know, you've got ambition, it pulls you and it drives you, but I think that almost kind of, you know, I had high blood pressure. It was, do you know what I mean? So it's like, and had massive anxiety. And I think that's what I would say would be something that I should have handled differently. But that's changed me, and that actually helped me. So I don't regret it, but that would be the thing that stands out. That's the project that almost kind of, you know, pushed me over the edge.
And I think that's really interesting now, looking back to our conversations around making sure that you look after yourself,
yes.
and that you're having breaks, mm-hmm. and that you go, okay, I'm juggling a lot of things, but I'm just going to focus on this task, take a break, and then come back, and
yes.
I'm going to take that full hour. It's, I suppose, maybe part of the learning in that is ensuring that you're protecting yourself
100%.
And your sanity
100%.
In your working practices.
Yes, that is essentially where it was born out of, because I was like, you know, I work hard, right? So I was like hardly taking any lunches. I was like at that desk and then working all the way, and sometimes 2, 3 in the morning, you know, like, get me a sandwich, or, you know, pop out, sit back at my desk, finish, you know, this is what I wanted. And you know, I in part I did that to myself, because I was so motivated to get that promotion, because this is what I saw, you know, this was the key. And I just was like, wow, you can work so hard and you can do all that and still not get what you want. So you have to prioritize yourself. And I also think that what is for you will never miss, right? So you try and push stuff. I think you work hard, you go with your passion, and things always work out. Whereas I was just like, brute force, we'll get it for me, at the detriment of everything. So I think part of it was my responsibility, but part of it was the company's responsibility. And it's about learning that, learning, understanding yourself and going, right, this is not going to happen to me again. And when you see all those things or elements of that, or recognise it in other future roles, you just go, no, thank you.
Yeah, walk away from that. Sorry, random question, but when you were in the office till like 2-3 in the morning, were there other people there too?
No.
Okay.
There's some people who'd work late, you know, on it, but I would probably be the last one. Or there'd be a couple of nights where we'd all leave at the same time. Or, but for this particular project, it was, I at least felt it was majority me.
Yeah. Because I think, I wonder whether that can be an indicator sometimes as well, of the imbalance of workload.
Yes, very much so. It wasn't fair, right? And I think, as looking back, you know, maybe, you know, I was trying to be as objective about it as possible. I just don't think it was right or fair. It almost, you know, it shouldn't push somebody to have high blood pressure or to have anxiety and panic attacks. Like a role shouldn't do that. But I think, you know, it was a different time. It was a long time ago. And you know, I think that agencies have moved on quite a lot about mental health and making sure people are supported, and those things are probably more few and far between. But I think that, you know, you just got to be careful and just make sure that you're getting enough sleep, that you can approach things with a level head. And I kind of going back to what we were saying before about watch out, you know, those things where you feel like you can't think and you're overwhelmed, just listen to that and speak to someone.
100%. Maria?
Yeah?
What would you like to do next?
What, like career-wise? Yeah. Or I love mentoring, okay? And I very much feel like there is something with Black women. And I think that there is support that we need, very much so. And I think that the challenges that we face are very different to people from other minorities or other ethnic backgrounds. And I think that I would love to do something supporting Black women in the mentoring space. Mm-hmm. But, you know, also having some creative aspects to it too. So, you know, watch this space. I think that being a Black woman in advertising is a trip sometimes. You know, it's different, and as I said, unique challenges. And I think that something that can help specifically Black women is something that I have a passion for.
Amazing. Ooh, I'm gonna be watching that. Okay, so if we go back to the very beginning.
Yes.
How did you get your first job? What was it?
Oh, my first job, I'm from Nottingham originally, and I went to South Bank University in London, and it was a culture shock because I'm from like a very Christian background, and that was a unique experience. And I left uni and I got a job working as a customer service advisor for an ISP. So if you wanted to register a domain, priscilla.com, yeah. I would need to make sure that I spelt your name out properly to register that domain. And then all of the subdomains would need to be correct and your email addresses. And that's what I did. And then I got headhunted to work for a .com called beans.com. You know, everybody in their Bitcoin. It was all about beans back then. And I worked there and I was doing more customer services. And that was a role where I was like, they're getting more money and their job is way more glamorous than my job. And they seem to be kind of up the chain slightly. How do they get to do what they did? And then I spoke to them and there was a bar in a basement. This was the good old days where like it was, people throwing money at .coms. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of moved into a role which was kind of a little bit more, No, it was another. It was account management. I moved into an account management role, and I didn't really know what I was doing. And yeah, I could have done that role a bit better. Anyway, I think it was like actually, it was what really kind of stood out to me was that the account managers had project managers, and it was the project managers that really had the control over the direction of the account. And when you're an account manager, you were at the mercy of whether we could produce stuff or whether things could be done, and then you would then have to take that news to the client, so you'd get a kick from the client. I'm just like, this is ridiculous. Like, this is, I literally have no control, right? So then I was like, I'm getting into project management. And then it's like, right, okay, I'm going to start doing elements of their role while I was in that role. And then I kind of went into a hybrid role, which was more kind of, it was, you know, 50-50 project management, account management. It's like, I love the project management side of it. So I continued with that. And then I had a midlife crisis at, how was it, 24? Mm-hmm. I was like, I don't know if I want to do this. I'm going to leave the industry, forget it, and I'm going to go work in TV. So I worked in television for a bit. I was a production assistant. Mm. And then I worked in the head office for Prada and, PR office for Prada. I did some fashion shows with Diesel, and then worked on a TV program called Spenderholic. And then I then went back into back, because I was like, yeah, it's all right, but it's not this completely different thing to what I'm already working on, and it's kind of full of nepotism, and it's all not really real. I might as well go back to what I'm doing in project management. Mm-hmm. So yeah, then I went back, and then I got bullied, and then, you know, it's quite a colourful career, actually.
That is a journey.
Yes, it's a journey. So yeah, it's, but then I'm really glad that I did it, because it really helped me to have that break and go, oh, I've done this and I've done that. And, you know, it made me go, right, I can have a bit of a balanced view, and I don't feel like I'm missing out because I tried it. And then I understand elements of my role better, right, in terms of the, you know, production side of it. So yeah, it was good. It was a good deviation, I feel. But yeah, and it also helped me to learn about myself. So that thing we were talking about in terms of not knowing what you want to do and doing little bits, I feel like I've done that, and it's really set me up, because I feel more secure and more happy in what I do.
Yeah, like having known that you've explored something else, yes, and that now you're set on, yes, the choice that you've made. Mm-hmm. That makes complete sense.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is one for everybody listening.
Okay.
What do you look for in the candidates you hire?
Oh, I would say this is easy. Enthusiasm. Okay, for me, it is, I'm really enthusiastic to come and work for the company that you're in, for the projects that you do, and I might not know something, but I really want to learn it, and I'm going to take my time to learn that stuff. You know, I'm just going to do it, and I'm going to take it, and I'm going to run with it, and I don't know everything. I'm not going to blag you, just want to do it, and I want to do a good job, and I want to learn. For me, that's what I look for. And being able to take instruction, and being a nice person, and not being stroppy, and, oh, you want me to do this? Oh, I can't do that. You know, just being open, because, you know, you have to pay your dues sometimes, right? You're not going to jump in a role and then be managing Burberry shoots, or managing, do you know what I mean? Like Prada, it's not going to happen. Mm. You know, you have to take your time, and people, and look at the people around you. How long did it take them to get into, you know, the position that you want to get into? The probably years, you know? So start looking at that, and be somebody who can see and be wise, and understand that relationships are key also, right? And being savvy about that, right? Or it's just being malleable and being open and being a bit of a sponge.
Because I think I was reading a trend report, and it was basically saying that the older generations think that Gen Z want things too quickly.
Yeah.
So they come in on day one and expect to be promoted like days later.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd like to say ambitious,
but
it is what it is. And so I think what you touched on just then around looking at how long it took other people within that business yes. to be promoted is like a nugget that is so insightful that people yeah. will completely miss. Mm. But if you do just do that, it probably gives you more of an understanding yes. of how things will work for you.
Yes. But so I would also say as well that the people that you're looking around, you know, they might be of a different ethnicity to you. They might have also have had advantages that you might not have, right? So if you take that and you go, right, okay, it's taken them 3 years, it might take me 3 years, but it might take longer because they have less barriers than you might have, right? Therefore, how are you going to mitigate that? Right, get yourself some mentors. Get yourself in front of these people who make those decisions. Get yourselves on the projects that are the ones that are going to PR you in the business, right? Start thinking on those lines and thinking the way, because sometimes their route, the other people's route might be A to B and you might have to go right. Because it's relatively easy for them, it might not be easy for you. So then you need to go, right, I'm then going to make these contacts here. I'm going to speak to my mentor about that. I'm going to be polished on every level, right? And improve my skills so they cannot say no to me.
Mm. Yeah, you've got to think about the other factors.
Yes.
Interesting. I can't imagine you doing this because I can imagine you having a very conversational interview style right. where you try and keep candidates relaxed.
Yes.
But do you have a question to throw people off?
I don't. I'm just very straightforward. Mm. And I don't. I just, for me, it's about finding out that the kind of enthusiasm that they're going to have, mm. right? And are they going to stick at the role if they are asked to do stuff that they've got a great attitude? That kind of stuff is what I want to find out. Mm-hmm. And I think, and if I don't think somebody's right for the role, I don't go, we'll speak to the recruiter about it. I just go, I think you're great, but I think in these elements, maybe you won't necessarily work for this role, not because it's you, but because the role demands this, mm-hmm. and I don't think you have that, mm-hmm. right? But I think you're great.
Yeah.
And that's an honest conversation. Mm-hmm. I think having this stale face and nowadays I think sometimes people who are hiring for people need to kind of look at their ethics and look at, you know, how they are letting candidates know that, you know, maybe they're unsuccessful for roles, because I just don't think, you know, leading people on and taking weeks to get back to them or not getting back to them at all and not giving them feedback is not right.
Yeah.
And I think people need to be taken to tasks for things like that. But I don't necessarily have questions to throw them. Mm. I think if there's something on their CV where I think that they're blagging, I will ask them more questions about it, because I just think, don't blag, just be honest.
Yeah.
You know, and because you have to work with this person on a day-to-day basis. And I think some people are excellent at interviewing, and then you get them on board and they're terrible. No, but it's for real. So that's why I just have an honest conversation with them, and I think. But yeah, no, I don't. I think it's rude to have a thing that throws them.
Mm.
And if there, sometimes I do ask a question and it might throw them. It's not because I got you wrong. It's just to see how they answer it is interesting. And there are people who feel like they've answered a question badly, and I've hired them because I think they're real and it's honest, and this is how I would have answered it.
Yeah.
You know? So just be yourself.
Have you ever been given a question that made you go, like, stop in your tracks or stalled you in any way?
No, but what I do find interesting sometimes is when you're, and it's happened to me a lot, is when you're being interviewed and they do all the talking. I find that a bit like, all right.
Mm.
You know, it's great, but I mean, I'm like, oh, how did it go? I don't know, because they do everything. You know,
yeah,
and I've done it where they've, you know, a lot of the times when they talk, it's because they already know that or feel like you can do the job, so it's great, and you get to the next one. But there's been times where they've done all the talk, most of the talking, and you don't get called back either. It's just like, oh, right, you know, that's odd.
Yeah, I'm with you. I wonder what the reason for that is.
I think that people aren't necessarily always trained to be managers, and they're not all. Always necessarily trained to be interviewers.
Mm.
I think that sometimes there's a natural ability to be to do both. But I went on interview training. God, was it last year or year before? And it was actually really, really good. It's my publicist. I'll plug them. But yeah, it was really, really good. And it was like, wow. Because I was like, I've got a little bit of a talent for interviewing. You know, I don't want to toot my own horn, but I'm okay in interviewing. But actually, I was like, wow, gosh, I'm guilty of all these things that sometimes you shouldn't be asking and shouldn't be approaching questions. And it was really insightful and really, really useful. So, yeah.
That's good. That's good to know. Mm.
I
think I'm out of questions.
Are you? Oh.
How was that? How did that feel?
It was good. It was all right. Thanks. I think so.
I think it was really, I think there are so many gems in there.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think if there's anything else that young people would want to know.
I think if you are in a position and you're in your 3-month review and there is some feedback that you get that isn't amazing, mm-hmm. for me, it's about taking that on board and getting somebody objective to look at, you know, what your review was, you know, what they've said in the review, mm. and looking at it objectively, mm. right, and seeing how you can get better and not being defensive about it would be my top advice, mm. for somebody who's already in a role. Mm. Because when I used to get any kind of criticism, it really threw me, and getting 360 degree feedback, I don't know if you've had that before, it's not amazing. You know, it can be amazing, but for me, I just used to find it very, oh my God, people are talking about me. Oh my God, they said, because what you do is you naturally, you completely disregard all the good stuff and you just focus on the one bad thing or the one thing that you can improve on. And my thing is take that as an opportunity and a challenge. If you think it's fair, you know, and just work out and go, right, I don't necessarily think it's fair, but I'm going to go overboard. Mm. You know, like when you're learning how to drive, I don't know if you know how to drive, but all right. So when I was learning how to drive, you know, my instructor said, I'm going to coach you to pass your test. So I know you look in the mirror, but be extra, like look like your eyes are coming out of your head at the mirror and, you know, move your head so it is so clear. Mm. That this is what you're doing. And I think what that then shows your managers and shows people around you is that you are taking it on board and that you are learning from it, right? And people go, oh, right, okay. That's, you know, it's like meet me halfway. And I think do that and I think you'll go far. It's about kind of being emotionally intelligent and being, you know, not taking everything personally would be my main piece of feedback I would give.
I think that's so good, because I'm thinking already, like, you can't be appraised on what people can't see.
Yes.
So you've just got to make it explicit that you're working on those areas of development.
Yes. And ask them, you know, for example, if they say the way that you take notes is not great, right, then make sure your notes are great. And then what do you think? You know I sent that over. Is that okay? Did you like it? Do you think it's getting better? And what would you think that I should add? Mm. Oh my God, people lap that stuff up. Yeah. Right? Yeah. You know, and that's kind of, you know, you would be surprised how well and how far that would go.
I suppose it shows enthusiasm, which is like one of the key things that you look for when you're hiring a candidate.
Yes. And people want, and I think it's really, 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 I think as you get more senior, you know, when you're a boss and you have a team, you want people who you can just go, oh, Priscilla, just do it. You know, just do it. And I can trust you that you with that client is going to be fine. I can trust you that you're going to have that meeting, you're going to make amazing notes. I can trust you. That's what you are trying to imbue with everybody around you. And I think when you do that, you would be surprised. You can't, if you're not consistent, you know, people would rather deal with people who are consistent. They might be mediocre consistent, but they're consistent, so they know that what they're going to get. If you have, you know, elements of brilliance and then you're rubbish and other, then it's like, oh, I don't know what I'm going to get from you. Mm. See what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's consistency and it's about enthusiasm would be what I would say.
Mm. So good. Oh, actually, maybe we should touch on that in terms of like workplace cultures. Mm-hmm. From what I've seen so far, a BEV is much appreciated. What would you suggest in terms of advising young people on taking part in the social atmosphere.
Yes. So when I started work, I was very resentful about having to spend any of my social time with people that I work with. I was like, I don't like these people. I have to spend 8 hours with them. Why am I going to go to the pub and drink when I'm hungry? And I'm just going to drink liquid. It's going to, you know, hurt my belly. And I don't even like these people anyway. And it's just going to be dry. So I don't get time to spend with my friends. So, you know, forget them. And what I found, was, like, people seemed to be in this kind of inner group. You know, people were just, like, super friendly. And then I went to the pub a couple times, and they were like, Maria! Yeah! And I was thinking, whoa, these people are wild. They are very different in the pub. And I was just like, wow. And it changed. And I have to say that, you know, I have made fostered amazing relationships with people from going to the pub. Mm. And it's been great. And for me, I would advise people to do it. It's part of the culture. You get things sorted out. You know, people are very different out of the office as they are in the office, you know, and you can. I think it's just about culture of people feeling that they can trust you, and the only way they can get to do that is by social events. And if you don't drink, that's fine. Get an orange juice, get a packet of crisps, you know. But I think kind of being there and people, I think people feel that you're part of it, right? If they feel that you don't go rightly or wrongly, sometimes people feel like, oh, you think you're better than this, or I just don't know you, you know. And I think that, you know, let's be honest about it. Let's be honest about it. And, you know, that would be my advice, that it changed one company, my perception of them and their perception of me by 180 degrees. Do you know what I mean? It was just like, wow, I love these people. It's all right. But I will eat when I drink, though.
Yeah. That's amazing. That, yeah. Like, one thing that I think is easy to dismiss because it's in your own time,
yes,
could actually make a big difference to how you experience the office culture and, I yes. suppose, like, your feelings and attitudes towards work.
Yes, because you just get to know people that you wouldn't normally talk to, right? Because if you're a project manager, right, you're quite siloed, or, you know, it could be that you just work on two accounts. Mm. So the people on those two accounts, you know, but the agency is a lot bigger than that, right? Mm. There might be people in finance, there might be people on different accounts, there might be front of house staff, there might be all these kind of people that you just don't know. Mm. And if you just form those relations, you just talk to them, and, oh my God, I love you. You know, I've made some of my best friends from agencies,
yeah,
and I still talk to them now.
Yeah.
You know, just me, I've never really worked with them, but they're at my agency and I saw them all the time. Like, yeah, what are you doing? Oh, it's just, you know, and it's I don't, you know, when I went to uni, somebody said to me, say yes to everything, right? As a general, you know, because you don't know what you're going to like and what you don't like. If you don't like it, then just stop doing it, right? But just see what that experience is and be open, and then go from there is what I say.
Mm.
You know, because not everybody is an extrovert. Not everybody's going to like it. But just, you know, show your face once or twice and see how it goes for you would be what I'd say.
Be open to the possibility.
Yeah.
Okay, I suppose the only thing that we haven't, I didn't actually have it in my questions, was around, like, salaries.
Ah, okay.
Because I do think that is a big one.
Mm-hmm.
People don't really know what to expect, and they don't know what the difference is between roles either.
Oh.
In terms of pay. And then maybe, like,
it depends on the role.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I think it really depends on the role. And I think sometimes when things are being advertised, they don't always put the salary.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that should be the main thing. I would say minimum 18k, but I would say, this is just me fingering the air, because I don't know, I'd probably say 18 to 24k what you're probably looking at.
Okay. And then,
as an entry level role,
when do you think it's appropriate to start having conversations about a salary increase? Because can you have that conversation without asking for a promotion?
It depends on the role, right? Okay. So for example, if a role's advertised and you go for the interview, I would say, okay, cool. One of the questions I would ask is, what are the kind of prospects in terms of kind of promotions and what's the trajectory and what would happen next and mm-hmm. cool. And then I'd say, ask them, what's the expectation? Is it that, you know, I'd be expect to be promoted into that role in 2 years' time, mm. 1 year's time? And I would ask them. Mm. I would ask them at interview stage.
Okay.
I think going in and being, and I'm 6 months later asking for a pay rise is probably not going to look very good.
Okay.
I've seen it.
Yeah. Like, why is it received badly?
Because it's seen as you've come in on this salary, right? We don't know what you've had before, because normally they would know what you were working on before. And I think it would be seen as, well, you're just in it for the money. You don't really care about the role. You're not caring about learning the craft. You just want the cash.
Mm.
So what? And if I don't give it to you, are you going to leave now? Mm. And there's this little bit of, are you grateful? Are you, you know, mm. rightly or wrongly, are you going to stay? You're going to leave now? You just want the cash. Oh, gosh, you're going to ask me a year now. You know, and it's just like, whereas I think you want to put the emphasis on, right, am I going to learn stuff? Like, mm. like, I think if you're going to ask for a pay rise, it should be, right, okay, I've learned all these skills and I'm giving this benefit to the company mm. over and above what you've hired, mm. right? And you need to demonstrate sometimes what value you're bringing
mm.
as opposed to, you just pay me more, right? Why? Because I've been here for 6 months.
Mm.
You know, what value have you given? And when you are going for a pay rise, you know, look at the value. What have you done that's over and above your role? How have you helped? Have you changed anything? Have you, you know,
mm.
put that case together is what I would say.
Interesting. So it's not as simple as just asking the question.
So one thing, if you're in the interview, you're at the early stages and it's an internship to be an account exec and they're offering 22k, I would ask in that interview, okay, great, it's a great role, what's the career progression?
Mm.
Oh, from account exec you'd be an account manager, cool, and how long would that typically be?
Mm.
Oh, it might take a year and a half, 2 years, depending on performance, right? Then I wouldn't probably, I probably would definitely not ask in 6 months. The year, I'd go my year's what's it called, appraisal, I would go, cool, so the trajectory you said, you know, how am I on course, where am I at with this,
mm-hmm.
and of course, and then kind of feel them out in terms of, you know, are people getting pay rises, etc., because you can get a pay rise and not get a promotion,
mm-hmm.
because sometimes the business there's not an open role for a promotion, but it might be that you get an inflation level pay rise. Or you did something amazing. So it's like, right, we've got enough account managers. You're not ready yet, but here's an extra bit on your salary because you're performing really well. And in a short period of time, I think you're going to get there.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's such sage advice. And especially just reframing it into a conversation around, am I on course to
mm-hmm.
move to the next level?
Because you might think you are on course and you're nowhere near on course. Because people don't have conversations sometimes they're not clear because people don't want to be awkward, right? And you might get a boss that you think everything's cool and they think you're terrible, you know what I mean? It happens. Or they just don't want to have, they like you but they don't really want to say, you know, right? So you take control of your career and you take control of knowing where you are, and when you ask, am I on track, and or am I, how do you think I'm performing?
Mm.
That's probably the better way to frame it, is how do you think I'm performing? So it's around your performance as opposed to, I just want more cash and I want to be promoted.
Well, I'm writing that down. Thanks for listening to the first episode of NSQ, No Stupid Questions, a podcast brought to you by the Ad Academy, a new online course from industry experts for untapped talent to help you understand how the creative industries work. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on your podcast platform of choice. And remember, success isn't always getting it right, it's learning. Until next time, goodbye.